Welcome to Technovation, a weekly conversation with people who are shaping the technology landscape. I'm Peter High, president of Meta Strategy, advisor to technology executives, Forbes columnist, book author, and your host. Each episode of Technovation features insights from top executives and thought leaders at the intersection of business, technology, and innovation. If you like what you hear, we'd be grateful if you give us a rating on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. And please subscribe so you don't miss a thing. Thank you. My guest this week is Shailesh Prakash. Shailesh is the Chief Information Officer and Chief Product Officer of the Washington Post. On the CIO side of his responsibilities, Shailesh runs the company's technology. And on the product engineering side, he focuses on digital innovation, the company's subscriptions platform, and everything it does to be on multiple platforms. Shailesh has spearheaded Arc Publishing, a suite of internal publishing tools the company now sells to other media organizations as a SaaS offering. Prior to joining the company, Shailesh was the vice president of engineering at Sears Holding Corporation, and he sits on the board of Blue Origin. In this interview, Shailesh describes the genesis story of Arc Publishing and how it was initially built by the company to meet its own needs. After realizing it had built one of the best media tech stacks in the industry, the company began selling it to other publishers. The Post now believes Arc Publishing has the ability to become a $100 million business. Shailesh also shares his view on building technology in-house versus buying and integrating, his experience on the board of Blue Origin, how Jeff Bezos has helped the company further its technology abilities, and how the company partners with large tech organizations such as Google, Apple, and Facebook, and a variety of other topics. And now a word from our sponsor. Technovation is brought to you by Fortinet. I recently caught up with Fortinet's Chief Information Security Officer, Phil Quaid, and he discussed the expanding threat landscape that IT executives and companies more generally encounter daily, and the ways in which Fortinet's security fabric can help.
Almost every organization faces an expanding attack surface caused by digital transformation, threat actors that automate sophisticated attacks, and a growing cybersecurity skills gap. It's more urgent than ever for security leaders to not only be technologists, but strategists that can enable business. The fundamental elements of cybersecurity are speed and integration. Combined with segmentation and access control, you can build a foundation that tilts the odds in your favor, defending at your points of strength. Fortinet can help. Our security fabric spans your entire networked environment from the IoT endpoint through your core and into multi-cloud environments. We integrate each security element to address today's growing threat environment, protecting the expanding attack surface and reduce complexity. This enables actionable threat intelligence to be shared at speed and scale, and automated mitigations that shrink risk windows. It's the cybersecurity strategy and technology used to protect the highest end systems, and it's now accessible to both enterprise and SMB. Just because you cannot eliminate cyber risk does not mean that you cannot manage it. Build your strategy around speed, automation, and integration.
Let's get back to our interview. Shailesh Prakash, welcome to Technovation. It's great to speak with you today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure. Shailesh, I thought we'd begin with your role at the Washington Post. You were the Chief Product and Chief Information Officer of the organization. And I wonder if you could talk a bit about the two sides of that, your product role as well as your CIO role, and how that fits within the Washington Post.
Sure. Let's do the CIO role first, because that's easier to understand, I think. I basically run technology, and that includes all our stuff that we do for the more IT-centric functions, like our general ledger, our HR systems, our financial systems, the help desk, etc. And then there's also the product engineering side, which is all about our digital innovation and our bread and butter subscriptions platform, all the stuff that we do to be on multiple platforms, whether it's Apple or Facebook or Snapchat or what have you. So really on the technology side, it's engineering, but there's two types of engineering. There's the IT side and there's the product engineering side. And on the product part of the equation, that's a little bit more complex because I really think it's a distributed role. I officially own product, but there are very smart people in the newsroom who don't report to me, but are in Marty's org, but with whom I work very closely, who have large product responsibilities. There are people in advertising, We just made an announcement just 10 minutes ago about a big hire. He's a joint report to the chief revenue officer and to me, who does a lot of innovate, who has in the past and will do in the future a lot of innovative revenue generating products. So net-net on the product side, it's really a combination of working across organizations. And that, I think, is the key to get things done in a media company. Now, traditionally, there is the wall between journalism and sales. And that wall, I think, is strong and should always be there. But that does not mean that on the product development side, that we behave as if no such wall exists. So we've been doing it for a while now. In the beginning, it was quite confusing. We spent some time trying to define what a product is, questions like, who is the owner of the homepage? What product owner owns the homepage? And I really think that those things are kind of irrelevant. The key to product development, successful product development, is to partner with sales, with engineering, with news, and to come up with things that delight sometimes our readers, sometimes our advertisers, sometimes our subscribers, and in the best case, all three of them. So,
very interesting. And I want to take you back a little bit further to the time when you joined the organization. You've been with the Washington Post for 7.5 years now. What attracted you to this opportunity? You've just talked about the wealth of areas that you now influence and control in various ways. But taking you back 7.5 years ago, especially, quite a trying time in the media space. A lot of people wondering whether or not it would really, maybe publications like the Washington Post would be able to make it through, given some of the chaos and the differences in business models, the depleting revenue in some cases across the media landscape. What attracted you to this opportunity?
Yeah, so look, I was and am a reader of the Washington Post. So the brand was familiar to me. I loved the content. I was an avid reader of the Post. But it was a cold call. I mean, I wasn't particularly looking to move into the media industry or consider moving to DC or anything of that sort. There was somebody who I knew from a past life who had come to work as the chief digital officer of the Washington Post company. He had put in my name and I didn't know that and I got a call. But I was intrigued enough because I knew the brand and I was an avid reader. And once I came in for the interviews, I was very impressed by the people I met, the passion that they had. Most people in media and journalism, I think, are missionaries rather than mercenaries. And, you know, it was a mission-oriented business as opposed to just a coin-operated business. Both those things were very appealing to me. And I also met with Don Graham, who at that time owned the Post. And I just found him to be such a fascinating and good person. I mean, he sat on the board of Facebook. So it wasn't like, you know, he was some kind of a novice in technology and the way the technology world worked. He pretty much knew every big name in Silicon Valley. But he was so humble. And I remember him clearly saying that, you know, the time had come for properties like the Washington Post to really now focus on product and design and technology, that it wasn't enough to be excellent in journalism, but, you know, we had to also become excellent in product and design and technology and data and analytics. And I found that fascinating. And I remember asking him, Don, do you want a technology person who comes in and, you know, you're keen on making sure that the trains run on time and we optimize costs and get the right vendor in for the right technology, for the right requirements? Or are you willing to go through some disruption and not necessarily come out on the other side, you know, with success? It could completely fail. And he said, no, I want somebody who's going to come here and give us new thinking and how we can transform into a media and technology company. So that was exciting to me. And that's what led me to come here. And I've been having a blast ever since.
Excellent. you mentioned, Shailesh, the focus on product, on design, technology, yeah. data analytics. It's insights around that and your immersion in it and its application in media that led to ARC Publishing. And I wonder if you could talk about the genesis of that idea, as well as a bit about what it has become, as this is a real differentiator for the Washington Post and something that your fingerprints are all over.
Sure. Look, I mean, I strongly believe that when you dabble in technology and product and design, there isn't a straight line between I'm here and this is where I want to go. So therefore, here are the steps we need to take to achieve it. In my 25 years, exploration and creativity often leads you down paths that you never thought you would end up in. So I would like to say that I had this grand plan of, doing ARC Publishing, and in year three, it would generate this much, and in year five, it would be, and here's the path to profitability, and this is the headcount. Unfortunately, that's not the case. I mean, like most things in the technology world, I was basically trying to, in the beginning, simply stop all the various problems we had in our publishing stack. Simple things like, the newsroom would publish an article and some of them would see it published. Others wouldn't be able to see it because there was cache incoherence in the platform. There were people who were so frustrated with the content management system that they simply would use Word to write their story, and because they had to, then cut and paste it into the CMS. So there was, much more basic problems that I needed to solve. We were using Lotus Email, So I wanted to move us forward, but my biggest task was blocking and tackling. And during the first 1.5 to 2 years, I had a lot of support from Catherine Weymouth, Don's niece, who used to be the CEO of the Washington Post, from my boss at that time, Steve Hills, who was watching the finances very carefully, but he gave me a lot of leeway to try things and to build things and to hire people that were very strong engineers. And of course, they cost money. So in the beginning, it was blocking and tackling, and little by little, our confidence grew. We decided to take on trying to rebuild some of the systems, rebuild them on our own. People often misunderstand that, it's so much easier for CIOs to build on their own rather than buy technology, because the integration of technology is difficult. It's more complicated. It's more sophisticated. I disagree. Buying sort of out-of-the-box technology and then trying to fit them all together is less stress on a CIO or CTO, because ultimately he or she has the ability to hide behind, 5, 6, 7, 10 vendors when things go south. If you try to build it on your own, now you are front and center responsible. There is no way to say, I can't meet that business requirement because that platform that we have doesn't support it. Well, you own the platform, you built it. How can you talk like that? So, and that precise control also helps the business move forward, because now the technology person, the product person, is able to be a first-class citizen in the business discussions, whether the business is news or advertising or subscriptions or what have you, because you are not going to that table bringing restraints, but rather you're bringing ideas. So you begin from a place of yes, rather than a place of, sorry, I would love to do it, but I can't. And I think that makes a big difference. And so began our journey of trying to build some of the smaller systems. At some point in that process, I remember talking to some of our engineers and saying, you know, maybe we can start aspiring to offer some of this stuff to others. How about we start with some university newspapers and we just host it and run it for free? Don't charge them. Let's see how they use it. And we on the back end will learn if we can truly run hosted systems and do software as a service. So we offered it to, I think it was about 10 universities, University of Maryland, Yale, Columbia, USC, et cetera. And they got some benefits. It was free software. It was being iterated on. But we also got huge benefits. We learned how multi-tenant architectures work, what is the cost to running some of these systems, what are the headaches, how to respond to multi-site issues, et cetera. And we got bolder. We fixed stuff. We learned stuff. We got bolder. And then we offered it commercially. But I was worried that, you know, we shouldn't go and try to land a big player. We should start small. So we, Alaska Dispatch News was very generous. They decided to give us a chance. Willamette Week, a weekly magazine in Oregon, gave us a chance. And I remember getting the first paycheck and thinking, wow, this might go somewhere. And then our big break was Toronto Globe and Mail. Greg Dufas and Phil Crawley and team believed in us. They gave us a chance. I remember that conversation. I remember talking to Greg and saying, you know, right, this is not all done. There'll be many things that we'll find that I'll have to fix along the way with your developers. And he said, that's exactly the type of partnership I want. I don't want a big shrink-wrapped thing that, you know, if I open the hood, then the warranty gets voided. I don't want that. I want a partnership. And so we worked on Toronto Globe and Mail, and they are on ARC to this day. They are happy customers. I talked to Greg quite a bit. Then we got Tronc. This is at the time Michael Ferro owned Tronc. He was keen to move the systems forward. And I remember that discussion. And by that time, we were confident enough where I remember telling the leadership with Michael Ferro that, look, let us not start small. Let's do the big ones first this time so that we can figure out everything about your most complicated systems, and then we'll do the smaller system. And, that turned out to be a learning experience. All of them are still on ARC. Things are going well with them. And then since then, I mean, now there is so much demand that my biggest worry is how will we handle all the demand that comes in? And what are the types of customers we need to agree to, as opposed to some that perhaps we don't take on at this time, because there's so much stuff we need to get onboarded and ready. And I don't want it to be the case that we sign the deal and then it takes us a while to even get to them, because then that's setting false expectations. So right now we've got pretty much every large advertising market in the US, if you will. Whether it's Chicago Tribune, LA Times, New York Daily News, Boston Globe, Dallas Morning News, Philadelphia Inquirer, of course, Washington Post here. Internationally, Le Parisien in France, El País in Spain, NZME in New Zealand, Infobae in Argentina, pretty much across the globe, many of the larger concerns are interested and either signed up and on ARC or in the process of doing it. And recently, we've had some good success with broadcast as well. So Raycom, we are powering the Raycom news sites and apps. It's 40-plus sites, 40-plus apps for them. We've just signed a deal with Graham Digital. for their TV stations. We've got a fairly large deal in Germany. We've signed it. We are working on getting them all set up, which is also a very large broadcaster. And I have aspirations that we'll expand into other brands, whether they are commercial brands. Pretty much nowadays, every large brand is a publisher, and they have perhaps not as sophisticated new needs as an 800-person newsroom with doing breaking news and all the different parts of it. But if you abstract the problem out, they have a variety of publishing needs that arc, and that's why we called it arc. It spans the arc of a publisher's needs. They have needs for, you know, 1, 2, 4, sometimes the whole stack of arc, because they are publishers as well. So that's really the journey of arc. Like I said, I didn't have a grand plan for it. I didn't have a spreadsheet with everything figured out. And I think most creative journeys begin like that. You begin to solve something, you think of something else, that leads to something else. And oftentimes you end up in a place that when you look back, you say, wow, how did we get here? Mm-hmm. We had our first ARC conference last year. This year we'll have plenty more. And I remember going there, and it was this nice, we did it down in our event center, nice graphics. The engineers were all prepared to give their talks. We had about 80 plus people from our client base, prospective clients, existing clients, etc. And it was so well organized and so well put together. And I remember taking aside some of the early engineers and saying, did you imagine we would be doing this today? Can you believe this? And we all had a big laugh.
That's interesting.
Because it's just been a very interesting journey, and none of us thought that this is where we would be.
Right.
And now that we have it, of course, our aspirations have grown significantly.
Well, it's interesting.
And we now have much more predictable operations. I've got a very strong chief technology officer who used to work with me in a past life. He's brought a lot of order and, you know, discipline into how we do things. So now we can have actual conversations with the CFO, agree to, you know, build revenue targets, agree to booked revenue targets. We put together, you know, how the profit margins will work, what the market segments will go after. Now it's a true business plan. But it certainly wasn't one when we began.
Well, you mentioned the advantage, and one of the attractions to joining the organization was Donald Graham, the scion of a remarkable family with the history of the Washington Post, the son of Catherine Graham, for example, and his curiosity and desire to become more sophisticated from a technology perspective as a publication. That was certainly amped up considerably in 2013 when he sold the periodical to Jeff Bezos. There certainly is as bright a mind in the technology space as there is. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that collaboration, his coming into the publication and the influence that he has had as somebody who's obviously a legend in the technology space.
Yes. So look, I mean, Jeff has been very nice to me. I'm indebted to him for believing in me and giving me a place at the table. I mean, and I've gotten an opportunity to spend some time with him, either on phone calls or sometimes face to face. And Jeff is many things. He's a brilliant strategist. He's a technologist. You know, he's so many things. But in my mind, Jeff is a hardcore product guy. He understands product. He sweats the details. He's our most active beta tester. He asks detailed, curious questions about our design, about the implementation. And, you know, I just love it. My engineers love it. I love it. And, you know, it is a partnership that I enjoy very much. My engineers enjoy it, and I suspect he enjoys it a lot too. because all true product and engineering people, in my opinion, are curious, inquisitive, and are very keen to sometimes talk at the 10,000 foot level, but the very next minute dive into some detail about how a certain widget should work and what's the most optimal way in which it should be designed. So that's been a partnership that Jeff has afforded to me and my team that we value a lot. Okay. And then, of course, you know, this whole concept of technology not just being sort of a back office function, being, you know, hey, let's talk to the engineer now that the plan is made, but actually being a first-class citizen that sits at the principal's table, in my mind, you know, that's natural for Jeff. And that helps with the culture that we have at the Post a lot. I mean, there's no doubt in anybody's mind that Jeff believes that, of course, we need to be fantastic in our journalism, but we absolutely need to be top-notch in our design and technology. There's no doubt in anybody's mind. And that helps with the budget, that helps with the hiring, that helps with the culture of the company. And, you know, it's just been a great to have him. So Don said the very same things. Jeff has perhaps 10x'd that type of thinking. He's given both the newsroom and technology funding to try our experiments, to double down on our winners, to not worry about failure. And these things have been invaluable to the Post. And then, of course, my boss, Fred, who's come on board, he's been here, probably 4, almost 5 years, I think. He's of the same mindset. Fred, we have discussions with Fred where I have my product managers or engineers and designers in the room. I meet with him every week with my one-on-ones with Fred is basically talking new products, talking some detail about some technology, and he enjoys it, and he has lots of great ideas. He has a lot of feedback. He says, why can't we do it like this? How about we do that? He'll connect us to others who might be able to help. So I just think we are in a different world now in terms of our culture and in terms of our leadership. And if we can keep going the way we are, on both the journalism, which Marty, I think, is hitting out of the park, and on the technology side, which I think we've made good progress on, I do think that we have a good shot of becoming, a news and information site that is indispensable, not just in the U.S., but in the world. And that's a big aspiration, but we think it's doable.
Excellent. It's great to hear that remarkable vision. I want to track back to something you mentioned earlier, which is the need to establish great partnerships. You've developed an ecosystem, in fact, of world-class partners. No surprise that AWS is among them, but Google also, in helping deliver all that you've described, among others. And I wonder if you could talk briefly about the role that the development of an ecosystem of world-class partners provides in helping you realize the vision you've described.
Right. So, I mean, our approach at the Post, and I'm not just saying the technical approach, we can talk about that too, but our general approach at the Post that my boss Fred talks about and Marty and I and all of us firmly believe is that, look, the big tech players, whether they are Google, or whether we're talking about Google or Facebook or Apple, I mean, you know, it's not right to consider them as the enemy. There is a lot of chatter in the media industry about how, you know, those platforms are the enemy of publishers. We don't agree with that. Are there scenarios where, you know, we are at odds with them? Of course, there are scenarios like that. But there are also so many other scenarios where if we partner effectively with them, it's beneficial for them and beneficial for us. So with that philosophy, we, I think, in my opinion, have had success in building a strong partnership at the highest levels of those companies, at the highest levels. Sometimes people say, oh, is it because perhaps Jeff knows all the top players that you guys talk to them and have a good relationship with them? The answer is no. I mean, I'm sure if we asked Jeff for introduction, he would give it to us, but it is built on our own strength. The relationship with Google, the relationship with Apple, the relationship with Facebook at the highest levels of the company is built on the sheer fact that we do not consider those platforms, those companies as bad for us. We think that if done right, it's good for their readers and our readers, and their advertisers and our advertisers, and their subscribers if they have subscriptions and our subscribers. So that's the partnership we've built. It helps, I think, that we have a culture where I'm happy to send two developers to Cupertino to work on the next iWatch app. We in the product and engineering group have strong engineer to engineer and product to product relationships where they, you know, perhaps come in with the approach that, this is a newspaper company. But then over time, begin to see us as also a nimble and aggressive and fast moving player. And it, delights their engineers to work with fast moving creative engineers on our side, and that relationship strengthens and deepens. So that's been in our approach. That's been our strategy and approach to working with the tech company, treating them as partners, not as enemies, not out in the media blasting them, etc., because that's simply not true. And also having a layer below the executive team that is in touch and working together all the time. And of course, I talked about designers and product managers and engineers, but all the cross collaboration that goes on in the newsroom, I mean those people too. I mean, our creative people in the newsroom are in almost daily touch with the Apple News people. They work very closely with Snapchat. They work very closely with Facebook. When we talk to Google News, whether it's the Trust Project or whether it is, how we can optimize the experiences, it is a set of people from engineering, product, and news who are willing, wanting, and very, very excited to work with the big tech players. So that's been, and then Amazon, of course. I mean, we know somebody at Amazon, so Jeff makes a lot of introductions, whether it's for AWS or for some of the teams in Amazon. But one thing I'll tell you, I mean, Jeff makes the introductions, and then we have to have our ideas stand on our own. Sometimes I think the scrutiny is perhaps even higher than if you are not owned by Jeff. There has never been a case, never, where Jeff has told a group in Amazon, you will do this. He makes the introductions. Sometimes he'll say a few kind words during the introduction. He may describe in a few lines what we've talked about. But beyond that, it's up to us to execute it with that group. And there are many, many, many areas and scenarios and times where we have not been able to consummate some partnership of ours because Amazon felt that the idea was not strong enough. Now, there have been other cases where it's been successful, but there have also been many where it simply hasn't gone through.
Understood. Yeah, so that, I want to also note you've made enough of an impression on the boss that you've been asked to join the advisory board of Blue Origin. And yet another really interesting and very different business from the one that you've been in and the industries you've been a part of in the past. I wonder if you could talk a bit about that experience and all that you've learned as a result of your exposure there.
So, yes, I mean, the pleasure is mine. The honor is mine to have a front row seat in a company like Blue Origin. I mean, it is the stuff that Blue Origin is doing and the problems they are tackling is truly hard tech. It's hard tech, and it's, I mean, I was talking to you about how the Washington Post is mission driven, and that's what excites me and makes me feel, wow, this is such an interesting industry and brand to be with. Blue Origin is also completely, it is very, very mission driven. I don't know if I can say completely. I don't think any brand is, but it is a mission driven company. These are engineers who are inventing new math, inventing new technology, inventing new materials in their passion to basically have millions of people living in space. And so it's been an honor. The honor is mine. My contribution is minimal, if not nothing. The people there are, you know, very smart. Where I can help a little bit is that, you know, like in any company, there are systems that you have to use to do procurement, systems that answer questions of how the where in the supply chain this part is, that, you know, do tools for more efficient production, etc. And so I mean, I don't know anything about rocket science. I'm fascinated with it. I love, and it's an honor for me to have a front row seat. But my contribution, the small contribution I make, is mostly advising Bob Smith, the CEO there, on how we might be able to do some of the supply chain stuff, talking about things like, you know, email security, things that a normal CIO does, and I do here for the Post as well. So that's my role there, but it's a fascinating world. I go there to Seattle once a month. I often come back, and on Monday I joke with my engineers here and say, so what is that widget problem you're telling me about again? You know, right? Yesterday I was talking to people and listening on how we might, how Blue Origin might have to, you know, conquer all these radiation problems on the way to Mars. And so what is that widget problem you were telling me again?
Puts it in perspective. Well, Shailesh Prakash, thank you so much for joining us on Technovation today. It's been a great to hear about the remarkable transformation that you've had a lead role in at the Washington Post, as well as some of your other experiences. So thank you so much for the great conversation.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for tuning in. Please join me next week when my guest will be Tom Peck, the Chief Information Officer and Chief Digital Officer of Ingram Micro.